The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sports Talk New York right here on WGBB. 1240 AM, 95.9 on your FM dial, 516-623-1240. That is the number to get under center and air it out deep with us tonight. Mike Trezza, Mike Adone with you for the next hour. Big Giant victory again. Big Jet victory. We've got all of that. Mets, Yankees, Islanders. We'll dip our toe in Knicks and Nets. All of it. Before we do it, let me say hi to my co-host, the coach, Mike Adone.
Trez, great to be here. What kind of world are we living in? It's like bizarro world. The Jets and Giants are winning. The Yankees have a tough one last night. Braves are out. Oh, Dodgers are out. It is. It's like bizarro world here, but we're excited to be here tonight. Once again, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at WGBB Sports Talk, WGBBSportsTalk.com, and on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere else you can screen. You can stream us. There you are, WGBB Sports Talk New York.
You know, back in the middle of the summer, Mike, you and I and others had fantasies about a Subway World Series this year. Clearly, it's not going to happen. Yanks are in trouble in the series right now. We'll get to them. But Mets are out of the Derby to help us put a bow on what happened to them in the playoffs. Our Mets reporter, a member of the Seven Line Army, the guy we call Cap, Chris Caputo, is on the line with us. What's up, Chris?
How's it going, fellas?
All right, good. Now, I'm going to get right into it, Chris. Scherzer, bad in the last start of the regular season down in Atlanta. Bad on that Friday night at home against the Padres. What do you think went on with Max? Was he out of gas? Was he hurt? Was he just not up to the moment?
He was definitely hurt. You know, coming back from the injury with the oblique, he obviously was pitching different, and I just don't think he was ready to go. I said that to people. I felt like something was wrong. He wasn't pitching the same way. And, you know, the way he was just giving up home runs, it was just not much left in the tank. The second thing is he actually told people before that playoff game that he needed to shut down for the season, that he needed, like, to recoup and to rest. And, you know, again, you got guys that are older. By the time you get to the end of the season, there's a good chance that they're going to need some rest.
Cap, good idea then, starting him game one as opposed to DeGrom and holding him back. I mean, I understand what they were trying to do with maybe, you know, pitching Bassett game two if necessary, but would you have gone with DeGrom game one?
I actually was in favor of DeGrom in game one. Five innings, get him out after five. That's my big thing with DeGrom is his sixth inning was terrible, but I felt like, you know, they basically packed it in on Wednesday, so they had a couple of days to get their bullpen ready. At some point, Rodriguez went off the roster, and Taijuan Walker was there in case they needed him. I was definitely in favor of DeGrom, you know, making his first playoff start at Citi Field being the first game, and then you could kind of take it from there, Bassett or, you know, if you were going to throw Scherzer in game two. But I just felt like Scherzer wasn't ready. I just felt like all three of them really had thrown up all over themselves in Atlanta, and that's what put him in this spot of having to pitch on that Friday night.
The biggest shock, I think, to most of us in Mets world was Starling Marte, you know, coming out and starting game one and being on the roster, and it wasn't a publicity stunt. I mean, he was good to go. Was that a little bit of gamesmanship there, you think, with all the things beforehand, or that he couldn't hold a bat, he couldn't do anything, or was that the real deal, and was it a good move activating him?
Honestly, I think he was really hurting, and he played through it, and somehow was able to swing the bat, get two singles. He couldn't throw the ball that well, but I think that was him just, who knows, maybe they shot him up with something, but he was out there ready to go. It's just unfortunate. You know, you get injuries, they happen at the wrong time of the year, sometimes they happen at the right time of the year, and you're healthy. And for him, they needed him down the stretch. And the other guys didn't do much. He went 2-for-4 that game. Escobar went 2-for-3. But otherwise, they had nobody else in game one that was swinging the bats well against Darvish.
You know, Chris, always when we come away from a series like this, we're looking for sort of somebody to blame or somebody to second guess. Do you have any second guesses of Buck in terms of the way he constructed the lineup, when he sent pitch hitters up, which pitch hitters, in which spot, or his use of the bullpen in any particular spot?
Well, let's be honest. They lost 7-1 in the first game, and Scherzer gave up, you know, bombs. I mean, these things were just getting destroyed. Bell, Grisham, Profar, Machado, these guys were drilling the ball. So I think at that point they were done. They weren't coming back. Third game, I mean, they didn't get any hits. Was a guy, you know, putting Vaseline on the ball? I don't know. But the two games that they lost, there was nothing that you can really say that Buck was the reason why they lost the game. I thought he almost lost game two for them by keeping DeGrom in. You know, he did kind of pitch his way out of it. I wouldn't put any blame on that. You just had two pitchers that didn't pitch that well. And for the Mets, I mean, they got shut down in game three. It was dead at that place. It was like a funeral. And I just feel bad.
The one place I did sort of second guess Buck in real time, Chris, and I wanted to see if you agree with me. After, and this was in game two, he brought in Diaz in the seventh inning. No problem for me.
Yep.
But after
45 minutes?
Right. After that 45-minute delay, now you're up 7-2. He brings Diaz out for the eighth, which I thought was a mistake. You heard Cone talking about it. I don't know if you were in the stadium or watching on TV. You heard Cone and Eduardo Perez talking about it. They didn't want to come out and second-guess Buck about that. But I'm saying to myself, wow, dude, you're up 7-2 now. I'm not bringing Diaz back out. And it didn't manifest itself in that game, but if you notice the next night, all right, you were already down 4-0, but Diaz gives up that hit to Juan Soto to now make it 6-0, and at that point, it was good night.
I agree. They had put up a four spot there. It took 45 minutes. There was no reason for him to come back in the game and pitch to two batters. Not even like he was going to get through the rest of the game or through the eighth inning. Oh, I felt good with so-and-so in this spot. You know, I wanted to bring an Ottavino to face this guy. You didn't need to bring Diaz back in. You should have just held him out for the next day. They also started Darren Ruff that day. I mean, he did walk and get hit by pitch. Well, what was he doing on the roster? Darren Ruff was awful.
His last name fits.
I did not. Yeah, exactly. I did not like the fact they, little things, they pinch hit with Gore, or pinch ran with Gore, and then, Nito swinging at the first pitch. If you're gonna pinch run with the fastest man in baseball, why are you swinging at the first pitch double play? So there were a lot of things that I kind of looked at, like, strategy wise, they could have done differently, but, you know, the Mets bailed him out in game two by scoring four runs in that seventh inning, and then the bullpen did okay. Honestly, guys, it was not the bullpen the reason why they lost. It was their starting pitchers. They just didn't do well enough, and you got to give the Padres credit. They are a superstar, all-star team that played right and well at the right time.
So if you got all the members of the seven-line army together in a room, okay, right now, and you take a poll, are they happy that San Diego took care of Los Angeles? Because now you go, well, all right, we lost to a team that's going to be in the championship series and probably the World Series. Or is it, oh, man, we lost to the Padres, and, you know, had we beaten them, then we could have taken out the Dodgers. Which one is it?
I don't think it really matters. I think people are just pissed, and they're also looking at it saying, you have the second wild card, or whatever, the 6th seed and the 5th seed that are now playing it. Both of these teams had to win 2 games on the road and then go play on the road in the next round against the 1 and 2 seed. So these teams have done it well. The Phillies had 17 straight days on the road before they came home. The Padres hadn't played a home game in the playoffs since 1999 or something like that. They were waiting for these moments, and I think they just got hot. Now, if you would have asked me before the playoffs started, I would have said playing in a wild card game puts you at a major disadvantage to play in the World Series. But now watching this, the teams that took the downtime are having the biggest troubles. Teams that, you know, trying to set up their rotation, these guys just haven't swung the bat, and I think it's worked negatively against the teams that have just sat around.
Let me get your view on this, Chris. Let's address the elephant in the room. Any problem with what Buck did that night with Musgrove? Should have done it sooner, shouldn't have done it at all, or did it at the right time? Which way do you go?
I think if he's going to do it, he's got to do it early. Because in the first inning, he asked for two baseballs from the bat boy. Again, I saw this afterwards. I was at the game. If he was going to do it, I would have done it early because for whatever reason, the Mets in the second inning already had the spin rates were, you know, 25 times what it normally did. He should have come out and done it then. To do it, you know, down 4-0, 6-0, it's a stretch. You know, there's so many things in baseball. I mean, you look at it right now, supposedly Major League Baseball is investigating the Braves for cheating during night games. And that's why, only because the Braves now just came out and said that they were pissed they didn't have any night games in the playoffs because they lost the day game. So everybody's going to look for an advantage here or there. People have ways of getting through the game. I just think Musgrove was really good that night, and the Mets weren't going to hit him whether he had Vaseline on the ball or not.
Great job, Cap. We will talk to you soon.
All right. 3-1 Yanks. Enjoy the night.
Oh, nice.
All right. Thanks, Cap.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
All right. So you heard it, Mike. 3-1 Yanks. I know Bader, my man Bader, had a home run, his third of the series tonight. He hit one in the first game, one in the second game. I'm sorry. One in the first game, one in the third game, and now another one tonight. So that trade all of a sudden doesn't look as bad as it did.
Does not look so, absolutely, because it was more of a defensive move for them to bring him in, and his bat has been doing the job. As Cappy said, yeah, 3-1 right now. Ramirez run scoring single to get Kwan in. And our old friend Rosario from the Mets, he's done some damage.
He's had a really good season.
He really has. It's, you know what, I'm happy for him because that was a guy, he was a highly touted prospect for the Mets. And, you know, for him to be traded and still, you know, now he's, you know, two games shy of championship series. He's in great shape. Happy for him.
We're going to talk some Yanks right now. To help us do that is our intrepid Yankee reporter, Declan Krogman. He joins us now. Deck, what's up, bro?
How are you guys?
What's up, Deck?
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Feeling good right now? 3-1 up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. My heart's racing big time in this game four, but, you know, 3-1, feeling good, headed into the middle of the fourth. Be nice to see that Coltrane take off and hold this lead.
So let's get to some second guessing like we got to with Chris. Specifically last night's game, Deck. I understand that Boone is a little hamstrung in that bullpen. Any problem with Schmidt in the ninth or any problem with the way he used the bullpen at all in the late innings last night?
Yeah, I had a big problem. I would have went with Holmes. Clay Holmes, from everything he said in the post-game press conference, he was ready to go last night. He was preparing to pitch. He wanted to pitch the ninth. He's the closer of this team in the postseason. Just because Aaron Boone isn't so comfortable or keen on him pitching back-to-back nights, the guy was ready to go, and this is the type of moment you have a big-time closer for. And Chapman's not that guy anymore. He's not on the roster for reasons external, of course, but Holmes is that guy for the Yankees, and he should have been the guy in the ninth last night.
I probably, if you want my second guess of Boone last night, here's what I would have done. I thought Loaisiga was throwing the ball really well. I would have tried to stretch Loaisiga out a little bit and sort of tried to close the gap with Peralta at the end. So I would have asked for a little bit more from Loaisiga, a little bit more from Peralta, and I wouldn't have brought Schmidt in at all if it were up to me.
I agree that Loaisiga was very good. I totally with you that we could have got a little more out of him. I thought that Boone used Peralta a little too much. Nearing 30 pitches with him, I thought that they could have pulled the plug a little bit earlier. Schmidt, you know, after a while, at a certain point, you play the game of who doesn't have it today, and he didn't have it down the stretch as the ninth inning unfolded, which was unfortunate. I would have went Holmes in that situation.
Little lineup change here tonight, Deck, for the Yankees. You know, you have Cabrera playing shortstop and Aaron Hicks getting his first action in the series. Interesting moves there. Any worries in Hicks coming off a little bit cold and not playing and taking Kiner Falefa out of the lineup at shortstop?
Some worry for sure, because every time he swings, it looks like his oblique is on a delay for like a second and a half, and then he starts running to first base. I worry about him a lot. Defensively, this move stems from IKF just not being able to make plays. The Cabrera play last night was more in part on the Yankees defensively having him play that far back,
yeah,
as opposed to Cabrera, who's not a natural outfielder himself. But this move stems to get IKF out of shortstop, which is a move I agree with both offensively and defensively wholeheartedly. This is the right move. But Hicks is a spot that I would have liked to see Peraza get a chance in, but he's not on that postseason roster regardless.
I'm going to give you another chance, Dak, to participate in the favorite sport of Yankee fans,
okay,
and that's second-guessing Boone. Any problem with Carpenter as a pinch hitter in that game, too, that Friday game that they lost?
No, I don't have a problem with it.
I didn't either. I thought that was fine.
I'm on the same page with you for sure on that one.
So now going in, let's think positively. Yankees win tonight, and we go into tomorrow. Who's taking the ball on this short notice here in a huge game, closeout game? Any word on that? Mike and I were talking a little bit about this before he came on deck as to who that might possibly be. Who would you like to see?
Yeah, I can say with confidence it's going to be Jameson Taillon, and I think that's the right move. Despite him throwing in the 10th inning a couple days ago, he's going to be ready to go in Game 5 to face Aaron Civale of Cleveland. And I think that'll be a matchup that the Yankees will prefer, having him trot out Game 5. Of course, you would have liked to see him in Game 4 with the Yankees up 2-1 tonight, but with the situation what it is right now, the Yankees will feel pretty comfortable trotting out J-Mo for Game 5.
And if J-Mo should have a rough first or second inning, Deck, are you going right away to Nestor, or is it too soon for that? Are you going to Herman? Why is Herman on this roster if you're not going to him?
That is definitely a fair question, because Herman is more so a four starter in the sense that you want to use him if you really have to. So if you can get a guy like J-Mo in front of him, that's going to be ideal for the Yankees. I don't hate the idea of Cortez. Nestor would be great coming in relief in a do or die game like that. But I would see all signs pointing to Herman being the guy to do so, to really, compound right behind J-Mo and throw a little hybrid relief appearance.
Yeah, Mike and I were talking about it off the air before the show started, the fact that Major League Baseball made what I thought was an asinine decision to put that day off in between Game 1 and Game 2. That ended up pushing Nestor back to Friday. So, obviously, if we get to Game 5, you know, he would have to either go a couple innings on short rest, or you'd have to go to somebody else. I thought that was such a terrible decision on their part.
Yeah, the MLB sandbagged themselves by giving that day off early and not preparing for the rainout on the back end there with the travel day. But this hurts Cleveland a lot more than it hurts the Yankees. We've seen Gerrit Cole. It's Game 4 already. He's making his second start. And I apologize. He just gave up a home run.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that.
Sorry. All right.
that's all right. I was doing the hand signals to Trez over here, and he gave me the okay. So that's okay, Deck. We understand. You're watching it live here, pal.
I apologize for the pause there. But as I was saying, Gerrit Cole's pitching twice already in a 5-game series. Cleveland's ace, former Cy Young winner Shane Bieber, not Justin Bieber, as Bob Costa said on the air. Shane Bieber is not going to be able to go twice now, as he's going to be unavailable for Game 5. That's big for the Yankees, as their path to victory inevitably goes through a Game 5 in the Bronx.
And you know what's funny is it always seems like a guy that you don't expect to step up and have a big series. You know, we looked at that Montgomery for Bader trade at the trade line, and I got to be honest, it didn't look so good. I was having trouble understanding it, and now that Bader's homered three times in this series, I think it looks a whole lot better. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I went on record a while ago saying at the trade deadline I liked the move, because even though he was hurt, Monty was not necessarily pitching as great as he was for the Cardinals down the stretch as he was for the Yankees at that point, and Herman was going to probably give what at the time looked like would be similar numbers. And Monty fell off a little bit towards the end and didn't pitch really much at all for the Cardinals besides a couple innings in the postseason, And now Bader, really, I could see him as the leadoff hitter next year. And I could make the argument, really, to have him be the leadoff hitter now. But he's been an excellent addition to the team, and he's already clutched up and had some big postseason moments.
Great job, Deck. We're going to let you get back and watch the game. Text me any updates you might get along the way.
Sounds good. I'll pass any information along. Thanks, guys.
All right, Deck. Keep the faith, pal.
All right, Mike. Did you realize? I didn't realize. I woke up this morning. I didn't get myself a gun. I woke up this morning, and I realized it's hockey season.
Yes.
Did you realize that?
I did. Now listen, you know, I realized it's hockey season for a couple of reasons, but even more so when my Islanders last night put 7 pucks in the net against the Anaheim Ducks, in game 2. You know, as an Islander fan last year, the team was on the road for a couple of weeks to start the season. So, you know, to have them starting at home this year, 4 straight games, you know, and tough first game, you know, 3-1 loss. Once again, I'm thinking, oh man, here we go with the Islanders again. They can't get a sniper. They can't put pucks in the net. You know, it's always great defense or whatever else. And then last night I happened to be out and I was scrolling through my scores and I see it was 5-0 at the time. And I went, oh my goodness. And then I saw, no, not is it, you know, even an offensive barrage from the forwards or centers. It's the defense that did the job. So I'm sure when we have our man Johnny Sticks on here in just a second, we'll be talking about the Islanders defense carrying them. But, you know, we have to also give props to the Rangers who, although, you know, great first game, little shaky second game, they are one of the top teams, if not, you know, the leader in the clubhouse at the moment, only 2 games in, who are going to be carrying the mantle of New York hockey here probably this entire year. Tough as an Islander fan. Couple of changes, you know, new coach, but we're excited. And, you know, again, hard to think of hockey. It's not cold yet.
It's very hard for me to think.
I understand.
With the Yanks in the playoffs.
Oh, my God.
And with the Giants
5-1,
which we're going to get to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is very, very difficult for me to get juiced up about hockey, but we're going to do that right now. On the phone with us is our hockey reporter, our Islanders reporter. We call him Johnny Sticks. You can call him John Santa Maria. He joins us now. And on Columbus Week, where else would we want to be but on the Santa Maria? What's up, John?
Great to have hockey back.
Yes, sir.
So, John, you know, I took a look at the roster because, as I said, I've been, you know, kind of juiced up about the Yanks, juiced up about the Giants. I took a look at the roster, and it looks a lot like last year's roster. I mean, what were the big changes in the offseason, and who left, who came, and how are they going to fit in?
2 big changes. Zdeno Chara, Andy Green, both retired. In comes Alexander Romanov on defense, and Robin Fowell now has a full-time role on the Islanders' defense corps. That defensive corps, with the exception of Adam Pellick, who had a belated birthday to him, is now all under the age of 30. So that is huge for that team. So the team gets a little bit younger, which has been a problem, but I also think that group on defense is a little bit more quicker because of the youth that they've put in and from what they've subtracted. And by the way, before we get going with that, kudos to great careers to both Chara and Green. It was nice to have them both finish their careers here on Long Island.
You mentioned Alexander Romanov. Excellent addition, I think, Johnny, for the Islanders, you know, for a lot of reasons. Again, young, big player, but guy throws his body around on the ice.
He could block shots. Watching the first 2 games, he's going to be top of the league at block shots if this keeps going.
So I was saying, as you were calling in, you know, 7 goals last night, big number for the Islanders any time of the year, but especially, you know, early on, get them going. But once again, it was the defense that scored the majority of the goals. So game 1, struggled to score. Game 2, 7 big ones, but again, it's the defense. Any worries, you know, once again, that we don't have the sniper that everyone has been calling for all these years?
Well, I don't think they had trouble to score in game 1. I just think Sergei Bobrovsky played at his pace, what he does very well. He can carry a game. That's what he had to do in game number 1. I think what you're seeing, too, is through these first 2 games, even if you don't have the sniper, it's just a matter of approach, and it seems Wayne Lambert's got these guys skating much better. They're focusing more on offense. He's talking about speed, even from the defenseman. Like, when's the last time you would have thought a two-goal game from Scotty Mayfield, yeah, of all people? Holy moly.
No, that's a great point. Their whole style is kind of taking a little bit more of a modern edge.
But the key thing, and he said this, Lane Lambert, the day he got hired, we're not changing the defense. The defensive mindset's still there. We're making tweaks. And you saw it in game one. You saw it last night. He's not – Barry Trotz, I think, was very obligated to keeping his lines the same. And talking to people, talking to fans, they felt that teams knew what they were going to expect when they played the Islanders. When line one came on, says, okay, here comes Barzal. But now you're mixing up the different forward combinations. You're giving teams some different looks. And Lane Lambert's not quick. He's going to be a little quicker to make changes to the forward pairing. Now, we keep that fourth line alone. We don't talk about that because you really don't change that line unless there's injuries. But the top three lines, oh, yes, I expect tweaking based on the matchups, too. So I wouldn't be surprised if that group, if those lines look a little different on Tuesday night when they play the Sharks.
So, John, last year I know the thing with COVID right around Thanksgiving time or before that sort of derailed the Islanders' season. Do you think there was also a component of sort of a feeling out process of the new building? And if so, do you think that that's going to change this year, and how quickly, if it does?
No, I don't think there was a feeling out process of the new building. I think once a couple of games went through, I think that was fine. I think it was I think we could say it was COVID, and then also the pause with the scheduling. Look, remember, let's backtrack also to December also. All those different games that were getting postponed across, when you couldn't cross the border because there's still the COVID restrictions in Canada. I think that took a toll on them. That took a toll on the chemistry on top of everything else they were dealing with personally. So you're putting all that behind you now. And even Matt Barzal said at the start of camp, that just threw everything off for the season. It threw everything off for the team. So you just hope that they go back to the way that we saw them playing when they went to back-to-back conference finals.
I'm glad you mentioned Barzal, because signs the big contract, the extension, you know, finally gets that in his rearview mirror. You know, can that be understated for the state of the franchise also, that we finally kept, you know, someone in-house that was flirting with possibly free agency, but, you know, was here to stay for the foreseeable future, if not longer?
Oh, absolutely was big. It's not a distraction going into the season. I think the difference with him is all along he wanted to be here.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Again, I think he's thought of, he's an exciting player. You know, he's going to give you the goals. He's not going to be the sniper, but it's just good for the building, I think, also, and good for the team when you have someone who's just as fan favorite as he is to be with the club.
100%. I think the one thing too that, a lot of reports out there that maybe he was the one who helped make the decision on Barry Trotz's future, and that if he did push for Lane Lambert and that was the answer and that got it signed, good for them. Good for them that it worked, and let's hope everything works out in the long run.
Wednesday, October 26th, John, first meeting of the year against the New York Rangers. Will you be in the building? And if you will be in the building, will you be engaging in fisticuffs in the stands?
At this moment, I will not be in the building, unfortunately.
Will you be engaging in fisticuffs at home? I hope not.
But also, don't forget this. This is the only meeting in the building this year at UBS. They play only the Rangers three times. The other two are at the Garden.
Wow.
Because of the schedule. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But that game has a lot of importance. Let's discuss that for a minute. If all goes as according to plan, that will be Josh Bailey's 1,000th game in an Islanders uniform, which is impressive.
Wow.
That is a night. That's a moment.
It's a fantastic
celebrate.
Milestone, absolutely.
My prediction, number 12 will be retired at UBS Arena in the near future.
All right, Johnny. Listen, we got to get to break. Great job. We're looking forward to some hockey. Give me a buzz around the middle of January, and I'll be glad to get out to UBS with you. All right, but first I got to see where my Yankees go and see where the Giants go this year.
Yeah, start saving that money for the possible Game 5 tomorrow in ALCS. Enjoy.
All right, John.
All right,
thanks.
John. Thanks a lot, pal.
All right.
All right, let's go Islanders.
We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, NFL football, Jets, Giants, and more right here on Sports Talk New York.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk New York. Mike Trezor, Mike Gadone with you until 9 o'clock tonight. We covered Mets, Yanks, Islanders, and now it is time to get to some NFL football. Before we do, folks, we want to remind you the phone lines are now open. 516-623-1240, 516-623-1240. We'll take your call for the next half hour. And, Mike, here's what I want to say about New York football right now, okay? If you can show me the guy, the media guy, who covers football, who predicted that 6 weeks into the season, the Jets and the Giants are going to have a total of 9 wins. Tell me who he is, and I will go over his house, and I will wash his car in the driveway, clean his house, or whatever he wants me to do.
I don't even think Nostradamus could have had done that. I mean, I just looked this up. This is the second place New York Jets. Second place. They're 4-2. They're one game behind Buffalo.
That's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
So let's start with the Jets. Now, listen, up till this point, Mike, they had the miraculous last-minute win over Cleveland. Okay, we can sort of put that one to the side. They beat Pittsburgh, who, can we be honest, is not really good. And, listen, I'm not trying to throw cold water. I'm just trying to put this in perspective. They beat the Dolphins really bad, beat up the Dolphins, but with a third-string quarterback. All right? Today's victory to go out to Lambeau and really put it on Aaron Rodgers. And they gave Aaron Rodgers a really rough going over in that game. That is impressive.
Absolutely. And off air, when we were talking about this, we had mentioned, you know, Zach Wilson and talking about Jets offense. This, you were 100% right when you said this game today had nothing to do with the Jets offense.
No.
I mean, it was real, it was defense and I wish we had Coach Westhoff on special teams. Also had a couple of blocks, you know, scoring off a block punt. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rodgers, he had no time to throw the ball. I know people don't want to hear this because it's fantasy football, but he's my fantasy quarterback. And, you know, while he's not my favorite human being, I'm watching him and going, wow, this guy has no time to throw the ball.
Yeah, I mean, the Jet defense was terrific. Let's first talk about the offense. Again, Zach Wilson, very, very modest stats, 10 for 18, no touchdowns. And what was the yardage total you said, Mike?
110.
Yeah, that's not going to blow you away.
No.
On the positive side, Breece Hall, who's turning into a really good running back, 20 carries, 116 yards, and a touchdown, 5.8 average per carry. And then Michael Carter, 6 carries for 41. He averaged almost 7 yards a carry. So the Jets were just eating up chunks of yardage on the ground.
They were. And then late in the game also, when they were trying to kill clock, what did they do? They were able to run the ball, which is, you know, it's a coach's dream. And like you said, Zach Wilson, 110 yards. When you have guys like that eating up chunks of yardage, you don't need him to do anything else. They're so smart in the way they're using him now. Rolling him out, having him make, he almost threw one into the end zone, tiptoeing out of bounds would have been an amazing play, but they were talking about later on that he needed to have a sit down with Coach Saleh and talk about those types of decisions. But when he's only throwing the ball 18 times, 10 completions, and like you said, Hall and Carter, also Braxton Berrios end the round, scores on a 20 yarder. They're mixing it up, keeping defenses off balance. That's what you want.
And look at this, defense, Mike. I'll tell you right now, this is turning into a really good, really legitimate defense. Now, they've got some talent there, but I'm putting a lot of the credit on Coach Sala, who I've been telling everybody for 2 years now is going to be a really good coach. You weren't there the episode we had Marty Lyons on. Marty Lyons said to me on the air, on Spot on Sports, he said, when I met Robert Sala, I told him, Coach, you're the guy we've been waiting for 43 years. That's not me saying it. That's Marty Lyons saying it.
And that's someone who's been around the Jets, like you said, long time, and also
43 years.
And is involved. I mean, he's a radio guy, so he has intricate knowledge of the team, and if you're going to listen to someone, for sure. And I hate to keep bringing him up, but Mike Westhoff, same thing. When we talked to him early in training camp, he said he had never seen a Jets team as prepared as well as this one in so many years.
Quinnen Williams, 2 sacks
big
today.
Big time.
John Franklin Myers, 1 sack today. Sheldon Rankins, 1 sack today. Quincy Williams, 8 tackles. And C.J. Mosley, 7 tackles. Mike, those are some stats.
Great stats, and you forgot to mention a little sauce mixed into the, right?
Sauce is legit. Let's be honest. The kid is a player.
He is. And I had said to Mike when we came in too, I'm sure many of you Jet fans probably saw him with the cheese head running around. It's something that, you know, as an old school fan or coach, I'm going, oh man, don't do it. Come on. How many games do you want here, buddy? But you know what? Good for him. What the heck? You know, the Jets, they've been so irrelevant for so long. Go up there, have some fun, win some games. Why not?
516-623-1240 if you want to give us a buzz. So let's take a look at the next few games, Mike. On the 23rd, next Sunday, the Jets are out in Denver. The following week, they're home against New England. After that, they host Buffalo. So the road gets a little tougher from here. What do you think over those next few games?
Well, to shoot for two out of three would be asking a lot. I mean, I think that they would probably take one. I mean, Denver hasn't really been playing that well. You know, we'll see tomorrow night, Monday Night Football, if they've made any adjustments, you know, going out there to play it, no matter how well or poor the Broncos are playing is a tough go of it. Buffalo is Buffalo. But they got to get at least one of those games, keep something going. But you know what? Every time we doubt the Jets or the Giants, who we'll get to in a second, they come up big. Going out to Lambeau, winning this game, you know, why not believe they can win games on the road against top teams?
And by the way, just as an aside, the NFL and the networks never used to do this, and now they do this regularly. And this is scheduling the Giants and the Jets at the same time.
I was just thinking that this afternoon.
I was looking ahead to the schedule, Mike. That doesn't happen again until November 20th.
Okay.
So that's good news. For the next few weeks, one team has the 1 o'clock game, one team has the 4 o'clock game.
That never used to happen.
Right. But, I mean, listen, it's no secret. In the last few years, both teams have been dog poop, and the network said nobody's tuning into these games. New York is market number one, but nobody watches the Jets or Giants because they both stink.
No, it's a great
they
point.
Have to stop doing that now. At the beginning of the season, I'm going to be very honest with our listeners right now, Mike. I was watching the Jets because we do the show.
Sure.
And I felt like to be credible, to get on the air and talk about the Jets, I had to watch the Jets. Now I actually want to watch the Jets.
Well, they're a well-coached team, and who would have thought? I mean, we were making fun of Robert Sala earlier in the season when he said, "I'm taking receipts." Right? I think that was the word he
said. Yeah, he may want to pull those receipts out of his pocket right around now. You
absolutely,
know?
You know. And what I've noticed too is that he's more animated on the sidelines, which was not his thing. But again, why not? When your team's playing as well as it is, he's pumped up. He's got him 4-2 here. He deserves to take those receipts and more.
Sal is a good coach.
Yeah.
And you know what? What he said at the beginning of the season when people were making fun of the Jets and starting to do the same old Jets thing reminded me of Fossil when he did the I'm pushing the chips to the table thing. You know, and Fossil backed it up, and now Sala is backing it up. So there's some parallel there. I think Sala is a terrific coach. He's got some talent, again, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And that talent is going to carry his team. Maybe not playoffs this year, but the Jets, I really think, are going to be competitive this year.
It's nice to just see them relevant. I mean, I think all of us were worried if you were – Jet fan or not, with Miami having blown everybody out of the water early, but you know, then injuries and all sorts of things are happening down there. But where were the Jets going to find any wins along the way in the division or whatever else? You know, because you got Buffalo, who's a standard bearer, and even New England, who they've had trouble with, and who still, you know, gives anybody a problem, as you could see today. They won big. Where were the Jets gonna figure in? Well, here at 4-2, now we know.
516-623-1240 if you want to give us a buzz. We've got about 20 minutes left. And, Mike, before we get to the Giants, and I sure as heck don't want to give them the short shrift, they have to straighten out this delay of game call. Yeah. All right? Now, listen, I've heard it explained five different ways. When the clock hits zero, you're supposed to get a delay penalty.
Right.
And you see Dable, okay? Dable, every time I've seen him get really, really ticked off at a call this year, he's been right. And he was right today. That should have been a delay penalty in our stadium on Baltimore, and it was not called. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, and was there any explanation?
None.
No, and that's the thing, too. The NFL
it's
officials.
It's so inconsistent.
It's inconsistent. Nobody answers to it. And you know, in this era of replay and everything, these types of calls should never be questions. I mean, it should be right there. Zero, the clock at zero. It is. It's a delay.
Let's get to the Giants.
All right.
As Jim Morrison once said, Mike, 5-1, baby, not 1-5. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine.
Oh, yeah.
All right? So here's who we've beaten so far. Tennessee came from behind in that game. Carolina, the Bears. Green Bay came from behind in that game. And Baltimore came from behind in this game today. 5-1 on the season, Mike. Mike. This Giant team's for real.
Absolutely. And against a big-time quarterback, I mean, Lamar Jackson, I had brought up earlier, probably two shows ago, about his contract and was he overrated and different things. He made one ridiculously bad throw today that was, you know, intercepted and scored. But he can do it all. I mean, the guy is unreal. And they did a great job of containing him, number one. You know, he had a couple of runs here and there. He had a 25-yard run, not a killer, 210 yards, TD, interception. But the guy can take over the game no matter what. And, yes, they kept him in control. So Don Wink Martindale, former defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, he has got to be the happiest guy in the tri-state area today.
Let's go to the phones and welcome in Vinny. Vinny, how are you?
Hey, Mike. This is I'm Mike's friend Swaz from Western School.
Let's go, Swaz.
Welcome
good to hear from you, pal. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, Mike. Listen, I know you're talking football now, but
that's okay. Bring what you got to say.
Oh yeah. Well, you know how I feel about those oven mitts. Jeff McNeil puts it on his right hand, slides in the bag with his left hand with no oven gloves. I hate those. I want to hear what your buddy Mike has to think of them too.
So Mike, I'll just give you a little background here real quick. So Vinny is a huge Met fan like myself. He actually has a nephew who's in the system. So he's old school like me. And when these guys wear those big oven mitts when they steal, it number one is weird, but number two, they steal, but yet it's not protecting the hand that it's supposed to protect.
Well, I'll go even further than that, Vinny, if you want me to. I don't like head-first slides to begin with. I'd rather every guy slide into every base feet first. I think, and we saw an example of it in the Yankee game. I watched the first half inning, and then I ran out the door. All right, I told Mike I was running late, but I wasn't. I was watching the Yankee game. But Gleyber Torres, in the first inning, he goes in head-first. The ball gets past the fielder, and now Gleyber can't pop up quickly and go to third. If he would have slid feet first, he would have been able to go to third on that play, I thought.
Okay, it makes sense.
So,
but I'm old school. I used to slide head first myself. I never thought about wearing an oven glove. And Willie Mays would be like, Willie Mays, if he understands what's going on right now, he's probably so aggravated even watching it.
Thanks for the call, Vinny. So call again, bud.
Thanks for checking in, buddy. Great,
come
great
on,
to hear
Mike.
From you. All right, sounds good, bud. I'm so happy Swaz called in because we've been talking about this for weeks, and I keep telling him, call in. Come on, you got to do it. So there he did. So nice, a nice quick bump in the road here before we head back to the Giants.
So let's get back to the Giants, Mike. I thought that defense did a decent job of neutralizing Lamar. Now, you're never going to completely neutralize him. 7 carries for 77 yards. Again, that's a so-so day for him. Passing 17 for 32, for a touchdown, but also had a big pick. They had problems with Kenyon Drake, which I didn't think they should have. But they had problems with Andrews. Everybody has problems with Andrews. You can't cover Andrews. If he's not one of the, if he's not the best tight end in the league, Mike, he's one of the top, right up there with Kelce and with Kittles, I would say.
Guy's a beast. I mean, and seven catches today, 106 yards, touchdown. Yeah, he's literally unstoppable. So it's like one of those things. You got to pick your poison. When you're honed in on Lamar, you stop him. And yet you brought up Kenyon Drake. Somebody's got to break loose. So early in the game, it was Andrews just catching passes. Then shut him down a little bit. Then it went to Kenyon Drake. But in that second half of the third quarter, fourth quarter, they did a great job on everybody. So while they were picking their poison, they picked the right one eventually.
Jones, 19 for 27, 173 yards, two TDs, but key, no interceptions.
Absolutely.
Barkley, 22 for 83, with a touchdown, and Bellinger, the tight end, 5 catches, 38 yards, touchdown. Wandale Robinson, there was a Wandale Robinson sighting, 3 catches, 37 yards, and a touchdown. Of course, on D, Julian Love with the big interception. Showed some good moves after that interception as well.
Oh, I'll tell you, get him out there with some music going, that for sure. And Thibodeau, Big play late in the game. You know, one of the things that I felt, if you watch the game, was a little bit underrated here for the Giants today. Baltimore scores, gets a little momentum. Next kickoff, Gary Brightwell, name you don't hear very often, brings the ball 47 yards on the return, gets him right back, almost to, you know, over into enemy territory, and boom, they get going and they score as well to tie the game. So while it was a little play, huge in terms of momentum. And like I said, Daniel Jones, you know, 19 and 27. That's what you need out of him. It's when Barkley's running the ball and he got hurt and a little shoulder issue. He's a warrior as well. When Danny Dimes is out there, and I know we haven't heard that nickname in quite a while.
Let's bury that one.
Yeah, with no turnovers, one fumble, but that was at the end of the half because he was trying to make something happen. I think he's become, you know, a solid NFL quarterback.
But there were two plays in this game, Mike. I don't want to oversimplify. I thought really told the tale of intelligence versus non-intelligence, okay? Lamar Jackson gets the ball snapped over his head. You're the quarterback. What are you doing on that play, Mike?
Well, you're either diving on the ball, or if you're picking it up, you're throwing it out of bounds.
Okay. So Lamar Jackson gets the ball snapped over his head. Okay. He, instead of diving on the ball, which is what I would have done,
right.
He not only has such a high opinion of himself as to think he can not only scoop it up and run with it, he can scoop it up and throw it. It was a terrible mistake, Mike. It resulted in the Julian Love pick. And the other play on the other side that showed heads up and unselfishness on the Giants side, if you noticed on that very last drive, Saquon could have scored on
exactly,
that play.
Exactly, yes.
He said, hey, you know what? If I lie down right here, the game's over.
Absolutely.
And how many running backs would have taken that ball into the end zone and said, hey, you know what, guys? I'm padding my stats. I'm playing for my contract and my, Scott Ohl, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the heck with the game situation.
We saw it happen earlier in the season with Cleveland and the Jets.
Yes.
That's the whole reason why the Jets were allowed to come back and win the game.
Yes.
Yeah, Saquon, heads up. You know what? All the word is Dable and his staff are just doing a great job coaching this team up. I would guarantee you someone got in his ear. And if not, great job, Saquon. But whoever figured it out to take the knee so that they were able to run the clock out, just a great job. Yeah. And Lamar Jackson, that if you're going to be an MVP, you know, $50 million a year guy, like you said, I think that huge opinion of himself.
Fall on the ball.
Or if you're that skilled to pick it up, all right, because I think it was
then
third.
Then run with it.
Down, run with it and throw it out of bounds. You're behind the line of scrimmage. For Pete's sake, don't, you know, if you don't want to take the sack, you don't want to throw it, don't throw it to the middle of the field.
But you made a great point, Mike. I want to piggyback onto it. Here's the difference. Over this Giant regime, over the last, not just the last regime, the last three regimes, have been clown cars.
Yeah.
This is a staff that knows what they're doing, not just Abel, but also Kafka, also Martindale. Okay. These guys know what they're doing, Mike. To come from behind and beat Tennessee, all right, you could say Tennessee's not as good as they've been. To come from behind and beat Green Bay, neutral site game, all right, you want to minimize that? Okay. Baltimore's a pretty good team.
Absolutely.
We came from behind and beat them. And how are they doing it? They're doing it, honestly, I think, with good coaching.
And it's not coming from behind, absolutely. But the Green Bay game, you said you can minimize it if you want. I wouldn't for one huge reason. Green Bay, they even though it was neutral site in London, they had so much momentum that you know, old Giant teams would have just packed it in and been like, oh, you know, we, all right, we'll stick around, we'll try. They did not give an inch, and that's coaching and attitude.
So we've got just a few minutes left, Mike. Just enough time.
Brooklyn Nets? All right.
Just enough time to note that other than hockey, which started this week, basketball starts this coming Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Knicks at Memphis on Wednesday. Nets open at home against the Pelicans. You excited?
I really am. And you know what? Let's take the Nets first real quick. And I know I have, you know, those of you who listen to our program, you know, I have goofed on Mike for Nets fandom for quite some time. And it's easy to take shots. But let's look at the real story here. The big three. You get those guys playing this year, and playing to highest probability that they can. They're dangerous. They really are. Now, preseason basketball, watching it is akin to, you know, trying to...
It's a snooze fest.
It is. You know, you put it on and you get to bed. But I will say this. I've been pretty impressed with Ben Simmons in terms of his overall play. He's not going to shoot well. He's not going to shoot free throws. But they had him defending Giannis the other night. Against the Bucks. He can defend 1 through 5. He's bringing the ball up. He's starting offense. He's really, I think, can be a difference maker for them. So, you know, will it pan out to 40, 50, 60 games? By Christmas, will we have a different feel of it? Is it going to be a circus, as you said before? I hope not for that, because you know what? It's good for us. It's good for basketball, and it's just good for the league.
I'm just going to get that part on a loop where you said you were impressed by Ben Simmons and just keep playing it for an hour one night.
You know what? Listen, these days, professional basketball players, they get blown up so much for everything. And they're younger, they have a bigger upside, everything else. Ben Simmons, number one draft choice. He was never going to light the world on fire as an offensive player. I mean, he could run the floor, he could do different things. But as a basketball coach myself, defense is the one thing you can bring. Everybody can do it. You can, you know, rebounding, you got to work on it. But defense is a hard thing. It's a selfless thing. He's the missing part of the defense that they haven't had.
Next, obviously, key acquisition in the offseason was Jalen Brunson. Where do you see Jalen Brunson's role shaping up on this team? And can he make enough of a difference to take the Knicks from last year, a non-playoff team, to this year? Where, Mike?
All right, two very different and hard questions. Actually, not so hard. First one, his role. In watching the preseason, I truthfully have watched a little bit more. He's taken over the team. They look like a different squad. I mean, they're electric. He takes the ball to the basket. He can shoot from outside. They're moving the ball. Randall, you know, the pressure's off him. I think he can be a huge difference maker for them. You know, stay healthy, do it. He's a leader, and that's what they need. They need a solid guy, a leader, but somebody, for Pete's sake, who can play. Now, can he lead them? That's a tough one. The Eastern Conference is so loaded. I mean, for them, you know, to stay, you know, even in a play-in game, I think that's huge. Because you look at what you have. You have the Nets, can be dangerous either way, but you see them going far. They're going to be tough. Celtics, of course. Bucks, Miami Heat. I mean, right there. All these teams are well improved. They got guys throughout the year. They're just going to be, you know, tough to get it going. The rest of the Eastern Conference, even the Hawks, you know, they've they have the Knicks number. So where can the Knicks finish realistically? Sixth, seventh, eighth? To break above that going to be very difficult. But you know what? At least we got a little juice in the garden, I think. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised, Knicks fans, with what you see. And just be realistic. Okay, you know, we didn't make monster trades or whatever else or the huge draft choice. Be happy, though, that we're at least going to be back to, I think, 2 years ago. This is a Coach Tom Thibodeau kind of player, Coach Tom Thibodeau kind of team, and better days are ahead.
We got a minute or two left, Mike. Let's surf back to baseball just for a sec. 3-2 Yanks, sixth inning now. Can the Yanks hold on, pull this one out, and can they nail down that game five back at their place tomorrow night?
Ifs and buts, but you know what? I think it's really going to depend on Gerrit Cole. Can he finish this game out? I mean, when do you pull him? I don't have his pitch count in front of me, but he got through that tough inning. They're still up. Rizzo's up at the plate right now. Great sign that he was able to get through trouble and not, you know, give up long balls again. Again, where you got to ride this horse all the way to the finish line, I think, or at least as long as he can go. Who are you bringing in tonight?
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly, I'm glad I'm not Aaron Boone because honestly, I don't have a lot of faith in any of these guys right now.
You're damned if you do. You're damned if you don't.
Loaiza guy's been really good. Peralta's been good. I would not want to bring in Clark Schmidt again. I like the kid. He's just not ready yet, Mike. He's not ready.
No, he showed all the signs last night. His body language was fantastic. I'll tell you that because I'm a big believer in that too. And I watched him come in. And I said, wow, you know, this guy's not fazed by the moment, but you got to have the goods. And Ron Darling, not a name that a lot of Yankee fans enjoy hearing, but he made a great point at the end of the broadcast. He said that the Yankees are asking guys to do things at the most critical time that they are not comfortable or used to doing, you know. That's not Aaron Boone's fault.
Yeah. November 9th, Knicks at the Barclays Center. Mike and I will be there.
Let's go.
I will have my Kevin Durant jersey on. Mike is going to dust off his Jeremy Lin jersey from 2012 or whatever, whenever Lin Sanity was.
Ten years ago, you're right. That'll be fun. And then we got to find a Ranger fan to go with Johnny Sticks to the Islander Ranger game, or at least get Johnny Sticks some tickets so he can start dropping the gloves.
This was fun. We want to thank Chris Caputo for coming on with us. Thank you, Declan Krogman, for coming on with us. Thank you, Johnny Sticks, John Santa Maria, for talking some hockey with us. Thank you for Vinny, our caller.
Swaz, thank you very much.
Swaz, thank you. For our board operator is Brian Graves. Another great job out of him. For everybody here at Sports Talk New York, including the coach Mike Godone, this is Mike Trezza, thanking you for watching. If you missed any part of the show, folks, you can hear us again at 9. Mike and I are back in 2 weeks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.